All right, it's the Fan pregame on a Wednesday. Half the show, though, half the hosts. Justin Cuthbert with you for the next half hour in advance of the 2025 NBA draft on Sportsnet 1, where Cooper Flagg expected to go number one to the Dallas Mavericks. Dylan Harper expected to go two to the Spurs. And then it gets interesting. VJ Edgecombe, Jeremiah Fears, Ace Bailey, Con Knipl available there for the Sixers at three. The Raptors will select ninth. I guess the unfortunate end result of a few lost seasons here. But options are there for Masai Ujiri. Keep the pick, trade the pick. Let's see what he makes of tonight's festivities. To tee up the draft, let's bring in our first and only guest of the evening. Adam Zagoria is a basketball insider. Contributions can be found at NJ.com. Forbes and Zags blog, among others. And yeah, he's on the line with us now. Thanks for doing this, Adam.
Justin, how you doing, buddy? Good to be with you guys.
Doing pretty good. But Cooper Flagg is probably doing better right now. Dallas, an unexpected destination, I suppose, for the guy who's been number one the entire season, at least it seems. Is this as good of a bounce as he could have asked for? Not necessarily going to a team that is without controversy, but a team that's, you know, pretty established, has some really good players, let him fit into a winning-ish system at the very least right away.
Yeah, you know, I know Cooper and his family pretty well. I covered him in high school, and I was sort of secretly hoping that he didn't end up on a really bad team like, you know, the Washington Wizards or the Charlotte Hornets, because, you know, then you have to be the face of the team and carry the load and everything. So, you know, going to the Dallas Mavericks, I think, is great for him because he's going to, you know, play with two of the 75 greatest players of all time, Kyrie Irving when he gets back from his ACL, and Anthony Davis. Obviously, they have Klay Thompson and Daniel Gafford. You know, they have a very deep team. There was a lot of talk today on ESPN that they could, you know, be the biggest challengers to the Oklahoma City Thunder in the West next year. So I think it's great for Cooper. And, you know, I think fans are really going to get to see him evolve over the next few years offensively and defensively in the NBA.
A distinct Duke theme to tonight's festivities. Could we see three Blue Devils, in the top 10 with Knipl and Malawach also available tonight on draft night?
Yeah, I'll be shocked if that doesn't happen. You know, come on, Malawach is a guy who a lot of people are interested in. I spoke to a guy named Joe Mantegna, who coaches here at Blair Academy in New Jersey, who is an assistant coach on the South Sudan Olympic team. Malawach played for them in the Olympics, and he compared him to a young Joel Embiid. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, these are comps that are made when these guys are young, and who knows how it'll pan out, but, you know, that's a pretty amazing comparison. He's a 7'2" guy, tremendous shot blocker, rim protector. I know a lot of teams are interested in him. And then, you know, I think Con Knipl could go as high as like number four. You know, doesn't look super athletic, but 6'6" guy, really shoots it, you know, average about 17 a game at Duke, can score the ball, shot maker. So, you know, I thought Duke was going to win the national championship. I thought Cooper was the best player there. They blew this lead against Houston, but they're going to have a big night tonight.
And so will Rutgers, I suppose. Not quite at the Duke level, but Rutgers expected to produce at least two top 10 picks, maybe two top five picks, but that might be against Ace Bailey's wishes. Dylan Harper will go too, we expect, but Ace Bailey was, you know, thought to be top three almost all season long, but it feels like, you know, you mentioned Cooper Flagg. You didn't want him to go to a losing situation. It seems like Ace Bailey might want to go to a losing situation and slide potentially down to number six. What's the deal there? What's Ace Bailey trying to accomplish here by only, you know, skipping workouts and kind of going incognito ahead of this draft?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. He is the only U.S.-based prospect who has not worked out for a single team yet, or, you know, at all. I think you have to, you know, attribute that to his agent, Omar Cooper. You know, Ace is just an 18-year-old kid. He's a good kid. I don't think people should think he's a bad person. He's obviously being advised by his agent, doing what the agent thinks is best. It seems like they're trying to steer him, you know, maybe to the Wizards at six or the Nets at eight. because somehow they, you know, they think if he goes to a bad team, he can rise to stardom quicker. I mean, I personally think if you go to the Sixers at three, you know, he's probably the third best prospect. You'd be playing with Joel Embiid and Paul George and Tyrese Maxey. You'd be on a good team. They have a good chance to go to the playoffs. So, you know, I think that could be good for him. Plus, it's going to end up costing him, you know, $10 to $15 million if he drops to number six or number eight. So it's going to be fascinating to see. That's the biggest intrigue going into tonight. Who drafts him? Do they draft him and then trade him? Do the Sixers draft VJ Edgecombe at third, and then Ace falls to four or five with the Hornets or the Jazz, and they trade him? Or does he fall to six or eight? So it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, with the injury history, too, of Joel Embiid and Paul George, maybe he would be playing a lot with the Sixers next year if he ends up at three. But where would you, like, what's best practices here, or what are the best practices here for Daryl Morey? Because there's a couple different ways the Sixers could go. Are they building around Embiid? Are they building around Tyrese Maxey? Should they just pick the player with the highest upside, which may be Ace Bailey, and kind of go against those wishes? Like, if you were advising Daryl Morey, what do you think the Sixers should do?
You know, it's funny. I talked to an NBA executive today who said that Daryl Morey really doesn't believe in the draft and doesn't build through the draft. I mean, they, you know, it should be pointed out they did get Jared McCain a year ago, and he's played well for them before he got hurt. You know, they drafted Tyrese Maxey. He's probably the face of the team right now. So they have gotten players through the draft, but Morey's MO is really more, you know, wheeling and dealing, making trades, signing free agents. I also saw Seth Greenberg, my friend from ESPN, today say that Sixers should just trade Embiid and try to get, you know, some assets, including a lottery pick and maybe some younger players for him. But I think that they're going to run it back, especially with the Eastern Conference. You got Jason Tatum, Tyrese Haliburton, and Damian Lillard all out with Achilles injuries. Those are three teams, Boston, Indiana, Milwaukee, that are hurt next year. So teams like the Sixers and the Knicks and the Magic, you know, they're thinking, hey, we can make a big run. So I think the Sixers are going to keep their core intact. And then my guess would be they take VJ Edgecombe tonight at third.
Is that the right choice? Like, if you're looking at, you know, guys in the 3 to 10 range, is VJ Edgecombe the prospect you're highest on? And if not, who else are you interested in within the top 10 in terms of, you know, someone who you think can make a serious impact sooner than later?
Yeah, I mean, I saw, you know, Jay Billis, who I have a lot of respect for, compared him to a young Dwayne Wade or young Victor Oladipo. You know, again, VJ's a kid from the Bahamas. I know a little bit. He played here in New York at Long Island Lutheran. He's a good kid, you know, wants to kind of show out for the Bahamas and buy his mom a house. So I think that's a great pick for them at three. You know, after that, it's going to get interesting with, you know, you got Con Knipple, you got Ace Bailey, Trey Johnson, you know, played at Texas. He's drawn some comparisons to a young Ray Allen. So I think those are going to be, you know, after the top two, it's really going to get interesting tonight.
We're chatting with Adam Zagoria. It'll be interesting at nine for Raptors fans because this is kind of the unfortunate result, as I mentioned earlier, of, you know, some pretty real sacrifice for this group trying to be in the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes and ending up in a spot where it feels like they don't even seem all that confident with their ability to get a player that's going to make a serious impact for them, at least in the short term here, as they try to spin it forward in an Eastern Conference that is suddenly, as you mentioned, pretty wide open. What would you consider the best case scenario for the Raptors at number nine?
I mean, I've seen some mocks. You know, we talked about Kaman Malawach from Duke. You know, if he drops, if he's still there at nine, you know, he's a great pick. You know, Derek Queen from Maryland, who, by the way, is one of four former Montverde Academy kids, who, along with Cooper Flagg, who's going to go in the first round. My guy Kevin Boyle from New Jersey is going to have four players from his 2023-24 Montverde Academy team go in the first round, and Cooper Flagg will be his fourth number one pick. But, you know, Derek Queen's a guy, 6'10", averaged about 20 and 10 at Maryland last year. I think if he gets in the right system and is coached well and has good players around him, you know, he could be a real star going forward. So somebody like that, Malawach or Queen, if they drop, and then, you know, you got 3-and-D guys like Carter Bryant, Cedric Coward, who was originally a Division III player who almost transferred to Duke before declaring for the draft. You know, Asa Newell from Georgia. These guys are going to be around there, and you know, there'll be really good players left at nine for the Raptors.
Noah Asenge is a name that's been connected with the Raptors here over the last couple days and weeks. Do you have a scouting report on him?
You know, it's funny. I saw my guy Fran Fraschilla from ESPN posted today that this guy walked out of his team before game four of the German League Finals, and he was only averaging about under 4 points in the first three games, and he's only 198 pounds. So there's a couple knocks on him. How many 198-pound power forwards are there in the NBA? So, you know, that's kind of all I know about him, and none of that sounds great.
No, a couple red flags there, I imagine. Okay, so, you know, there's a couple teams, the Thunder and the Nets specifically, that have a bunch of picks. Like, we know the Thunder story by now. All 15 players can come back. Nikola Topic is going to be available for them next year, and they seem really high on that on him. They've got two first-round picks. What do you think the Thunder are going to do tonight, given that they have to spend picks and there's not many seats left on that roster? And the same with the Brooklyn Nets. Do they have something in store, given that they've accrued all these first-round picks, and it seems unlikely that they'll just want to bring in a bunch of rookies with these draft picks? Like, they might want to package, move up, move down, figure something out in order to avoid having just this pure influx of first-round picks coming into camp.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I mean, I believe no team has ever made five first-round picks in the NBA draft. And if you listen to the intel, the Nets are planning on making all five of those picks. I mean, it seems sort of shocking that they wouldn't package some of it in a trade. But, you know, five young guys, five rookies is a lot, and you got to think they're going to make some trades down the road. I think the stat is like four teams, the Thunder, the Nets, the Jazz, and the Wizards have 11 of the first 30 picks. So I just think in the big picture, you're going to see a lot of trades, you know, tonight and in the coming days. You know, the Nets, like, you would think they would want to package some of these picks for a star or a superstar, but, you know, I live here in New York, and they've tried and failed several times in the past decade, right? They got Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. They didn't win with those guys. They had Harden, Durant, Kyrie. That blew up in their face. You know, then they traded, you know, Mikal Bridges to the Knicks. So it hasn't really worked out for them in terms of assembling a superstar core. So, you know, I think the best path for them is they get some young guys, and then they can grow, you know, over time. But you're gonna have to add in obviously some veterans to be successful.
Last one for you, Adam. Four Canadians in the NBA finals, two of which are NBA champions at current moment, and a couple Canadians available to be drafted over the next couple nights here. Will Riley is probably the number one guy. Ryan Nemhard, obviously, Andrew Nemhard's brother, also will be available. Will Riley, the number one guy at a Canada. Do you have a scouting report on him and what he might offer an NBA team next year?
Yeah, I see him go. I saw him play in high school a little bit. You know, I mean, he's also young. He's only 19. You know, 6'9" wing, averaged about 18 and 6 at Illinois last year. I think he's going to be a good player over time. I don't think you can expect, you know, a whole lot from him right away. You might have to spend some time in the G League. I see him mocked kind of in the early 20s. So, you know, he'll be one of these guys that could go anywhere, you know, after the lottery in the first round for a team that, you know, wants to invest in him and wait. And then, you know, Nemhard, it's so fascinating, right? Because his brother had a great NBA Finals, played terrific defense on SGA, covering him in the NBA Finals, and that, and I think that can only help, you know, his younger brother Ryan. And again, you know, Ryan's going to go somewhere in the second round, 4-year player coming out of Gonzaga, but he would be the fifth Montverde guy who played for Kevin Boyle drafted. So it could be a huge night for the Nemhard family, for Kevin Boyle, and for Canada, if you know, I guess that would be tomorrow night when he gets drafted.
Mm-hmm. Adam, we appreciate the time tonight. Enjoy the draft, and we'll connect down the line.
All right, guys. Thanks for your time.
That's Adam Zagoria of NJ.com, Forbes, Zags blog, basketball insider covering the NBA and the NBA draft specifically. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Raptors do tonight. It feels like the draft kind of falls off right at 9. Like, again, it's not this, like, clear line of demarcation, but, you know, I think, like, Malawak would make them happy. Jeremiah Fears, like, got to go down the line. There's some guys there in the top 6, 7, 8 that you get real excited about, and I'm sure Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster have their own spin on things and what might interest them, and surely they can mine some talent out of this draft at the 9 pick. It would be a mistake if they can't get something usable at 9, but, you know, we've heard a lot about how they might want to move the pick. They might want to rush things. They might want to cut some corners, despite Sam Presti letting you know you probably shouldn't do that in order to be better next season. And maybe that's the right thing, because the Eastern Conference is in the situation that it's in. But it feels like the Raptors just are a little unsettled with where they are, and we'll see if they make a move at 9, move out at 9, or maybe move up and make something happen tonight. Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster and the Raptors on the clock. Okay, so in the NHL today, big news would be Evander Kane getting traded from the Edmonton Oilers to the Vancouver Canucks for a 4th-round pick. I guess this is being framed as a pretty big win for the Oilers, and I guess I'm in that camp, or at least in that camp, or adjacent to that camp. No retention, so $5.125 million save for the Edmonton Oilers. But I think it kind of just underscores the plight for Edmonton right now. I mean, this is a player that was, until he was part of the problem in the Stanley Cup Finals against the Florida Panthers, part of the solution. Like, he was really good from game number 2 on, really, until the championship series, and now he needs to be sacrificed in order to make room for the events to come. You know, signing Evan Bouchard and trying to get a more balanced roster, maybe addressing the goaltending situation. This guy was only going to take up 5.3% of the salary cap next season, and he had to be moved on an expiring deal. He was the luxury this year for the Edmonton Oilers on LTIR all season, back for the playoffs. And I know there's an investigation maybe going on there, but it just felt like this was something that was an add-on, an extra for the Oilers. Now they just have to give it up before the season starts. So they're going to be looking to get more talent into this team, and they got to do it for Connor McDavid's sake. But, you know, if you look at parting with Kane, the same thing needs to happen with Victor Arvidsson, maybe Adam Henrique, because it's $4 million for Victor Arvidsson, didn't work. $3 million for Adam Henrique, pretty underwhelming, at least in the championship series. And who would you rather have between those three? Like, I'd take Evander Kane at 5.125 over Arvidsson at 4, and probably Adam Henrique at 3. So we'll see if they can continue cutting some of the fat that wasn't working when it matters the most. From the Canucks standpoint, what was the point in this? I guess there's been, like, I'll give Evander Kane that there's been some reform with him. Ultimately, I think he was a fine teammate in Edmonton. He seemed to toe the line and just, you know, do what he needed to be to not be a distraction there. And he was, you know, helpful in playoff runs for the Edmonton Oilers. It looked like, I guess, he straightened things out from a personal standpoint. He was, I guess, a professional with the Edmonton Oilers. But there's still the threat that Evander Kane might Evander Kane, right? And this Canucks roster was in chaos all of last year. You know the story with JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. And this is a group that doesn't, it's not one Evander Kane away from being a truly great team. So this is a potentially incendiary asset. And again, I think there was some reform, but I think it still could be there. And you're throwing him into a mix that was, you know, a little off last year. So there's that. And then there's just bailing out a division rival in the Edmonton Oilers. If you're the Vancouver Canucks, why do that? So I think there's going to be a lot of second guessing around this move. I think he you know, maybe a 50-50 chance that it was a really good move for Vancouver and that he will be helpful. But again, what is it going to get you, and where does it go after that with just 1 year remaining on his deal? We are going to shift our focus to the NHL draft. The next 2 shows, we'll have Frank Saravalli, Cam Robertson on, likely on Friday, maybe Ailish, and we can get our guy David Siss on as well. And while we have a few moments here, let's tee that up a little bit with our guy David Siss, the producer of the Fan pregame. This was supposed to be, Siss, the James Hagans draft, which would have been, I guess, particularly fortuitous for the New York Islanders, who are picking number 1, because if we told you 8 months ago that it was number 1 for the Islanders, It's likely they'd be calling the name of a Long Island product first overall in James Higgins, but something has changed. Our guy Sam Cosentino has Higgins number 10 right now on his latest mock draft. So why, sis, is this no longer the James Higgins draft? And don't focus on other risers. What happened to James Higgins specifically?
You know, I think when we look at James Higgins specifically, and it's not really what he did. It was nothing to do with his play this season. He finished with a point per game as a 17-year-old in the NCAA. That is not something that many players do. But we've been a little bit spoiled when you look at the past few years with especially Macklin Celebrini last year. I think he had 38 games played and 64 points or around that number. So we've been a little bit spoiled when we look at these top NCAA centers especially and that are projected to go first overall. But with Higgins, I think you really have to look at who he was playing with. You know, there was top prospects all around his lineup. He had all the help in the world. He never had to be the guy. So obviously the goal numbers for him were not very staggering, and he's not a elite goal scorer. He has a great shot. He's going to score goals at the NHL level. There's no doubt about that, but he is a pass first player. And when you have the elite talent around you, like a Ryan Leonard, I mean, your first focus is going to be passing the puck, creating plays. And no, there were no shortage of chances where, you know, everyone, including the goalie, thinks he's going to shoot the puck. It is a prime grade A scoring chance, and he passes it. No, the level of deception he has in his playmaking ability is outstanding. One of, if not the best in the draft class. So when you combine that with his smarts, his vision, and his actual ability to pass the puck with accuracy at such high speeds, it just creates such a strong player. But, you know, we look at other guys, and I don't want to focus on those other guys that have risen a lot, but you look at guys that have single-handedly taken over the game. And in a variety of different ways. And that's something that Higgins has done. But when you have the level of talent around him that he never had to be that guy.
Okay, I'm not going to pit you against Sam Cosentino, but in 20 seconds, is 10 too far of a drop for James Higgins?
I would be very surprised if he falls to 10, just because of the pedigree and the level of potential this guy has.
Okay, there it is. I will continue to update our fan pregame best available. It was not, peek behind the curtain here, not me putting together the fan pregame. Best available. David Siss putting together the fan pregame best available. So we will continue to pick his brain over the next two shows as we look towards Friday's NHL draft. It should be interesting. Should be an interesting one tonight for the Toronto Blue Jays. They won the opener against the Cleveland Guardians last night. Another strong Eric Lauer start punctuated by George Springer hitting a grand slam in the eighth. But tonight is a big one. Max Scherzer making his return, his second start with the Blue Jays after two rehab starts with Buffalo. He fanned eight batters in his last appearance over four and a third innings to make room for the returning Max Scherzer. Spencer Turnbull was DFA'd today in order to create the space necessary to bring in the future Hall of Famer. A bit of an odd watch, maybe, for Blue Jays fans tonight. Like, this is not necessarily Tyrese Halliburton level of stakes and potential terror, but the thumb is the thumb with Max Scherzer. We understand at this point that the shoe could drop at any time. Like, we don't know what it's going to look like for Scherzer when he gets the adrenaline going in an actual major league game. Is the thumb going to hold up? Like, I think we're going to be holding our breath and just thinking about that every time he throws a pitch, as long as he lasts with the Blue Jays. But it will be start number two. We'll see if he can get to 15 so he can get $1 million per potential start for the Blue Jays. So yeah, it's an important one because Max Scherzer seems like he's pretty important to the success of the Blue Jays down the stretch as they continue to work through the rotation issues or the lack of options in the starting rotation. It'll be Gavin Williams getting the ball for the Guardians. The Blue Jays are plus 100 tonight. The Guardians slight favorites at minus 120. The total is 8 at minus 110. I'm going to bet the over. Like, I don't know exactly what we're going to see from Max Scherzer tonight, but this Blue Jays offense has been humming pretty good here. And if Max Scherzer, even if it's a really positive start for him, last four innings, four and a third, match what he did in Buffalo, you're still going to see a lot of relievers if you are Guardians batters in this game. So I like the over 8 between the Blue Jays and Guardians. Game 2 tomorrow will be the final game of the series. Will be an afternoon affair between those two. The NBA draft is tonight on Sportsnet 1. Cooper Flagg will go number 1, and we'll see what the Raptors do at number 9. And again, we will be back the next two nights to tee up the NHL draft Friday from Los Angeles. We will chat tomorrow.